The gurus of how to are here, Al and Larry Ubell, father and son, also known as Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York. When they're here, we take your calls at 212-433-9692. You can also leave a comment or a question, preferably a question, at WNYC.org. You just go to our show page and follow the instructions, and I'll try to get as many of those questions in as I can. It's good to see you guys.
I get quite a few of them directly to my email, so I'm answering them all the time.
And we do invite listeners to write to you. We do encourage them also to include a phone number because, Larry, you say it's the best way to deal with it. Going through email is impossible.
You have to go through them and you read them. It's great to get a synopsis of what you want, and actually do kind of make it a synopsis. Don't make it a novel, but actually having a conversation about a thing that's actually a physical item is much easier because there's a lot of back and forth, and to do analysis of it or a diagnosis of their problem, you need a lot of questions because one question leads to another question. By the time you're done, you have an email string that's almost 20 emails long, so it's easier to just call and do a small little radio show for them.
Most of the questions we have gotten in the past around this time have involved the transition into the cold weather. Mm-hmm. But I'd imagine we're going to get a few calls at least still dealing with the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of them all the time.
Are you seeing this in your regular business?
Yes.
I've done more than my share of condition inspections. Generally speaking, knock on wood, most of my clients that have called me in to look at their houses after they've been flooded out was the houses actually did pretty well. They didn't have foundation failures or anything like that.
But people lose furniture.
They lose furniture. And all that stuff gets pulled out of the building. And the biggest problem that really is the residual dampness. And I know we say this almost like a broken record, but get a dehumidifier and start sucking the moisture out of that building.
You got to pull the carpeting out?
Carpeting is saturated with salt. Just by vacuuming it and everything else is not going to take out the salt. The carpeting, if it has a value factor to the carpeting itself, it has to be taken to a commercial place and it has to actually be washed because the salt will only dissolve underwater. I mean, it will not be taken out by dry cleaning or something like that. It really has to be saturated with water to dissolve the salt particles. And that salt is doing more damage to the electrical service system of every building, especially if the main panel box was underwater. And that's a big, big problem.
One of the big problems for many homeowners, especially in Long Island, is that the electricity couldn't be turned on again until a licensed electrician came by. They were at short supply.
And certify the building. And that also, I have a client who does live out on Long Island, and the problem was if a whole block was on a particular circuit, and one person in the block wasn't checked out. In some cases, they couldn't turn the entire block on. And because, like you said, there was a lack of electricians around, or not a lack of, they're just overwhelmed by this immense event, that they weren't there to go do the service calls that needed to be done to check out the switchgear, the main circuit, the meter, and the meter pan, and all those things.
So, and my own house was flooded all the way up 18 inches into the first floor. It took about 3 or 4 days to pump out the water, so my electrical service system was underwater for almost 2 or 3 days.
That's because you live near the ocean.
Oh yeah, we're about a block from Jamaica Bay, and which is the opening to Lower New York Bay, which where the water just came right in up into Manhattan Island, but it also flooded out Seagate and the Rockaways, and which we can see from one point to another. But getting back to the major thing about the electrical panel box, you have to understand that the circuit breakers are now, many of them are destroyed, and they may not trip out if you'll have a short circuit. And so what happens is all the wiring that's in the building is going to act like a toaster, and that's going to cause a fire. That's what the big fear is. I had my entire panel box removed and replaced with all new circuit breakers. And the circuit breaker cannot be repaired.
What about the wet wires that are behind the walls?
Well, that's a problem, but it may not be a major problem because most of the wires, even though they're in the city of New York, they're in BX cable or conduit, are are laminated around with plastic or some sort of insulating material that prevents that from oxidizing, even though the BX cable may oxidize from the salt eventually. But the thing is, the main panel box is the protection center for the entire building, so that even if the connection or you have a short circuit within the wire or a junction box, you want the circuit breaker to trip out.
Now, we often read in the paper.
I just want to say one thing about circuit breakers. Circuit breakers are not just switches. They're actually sophisticated heat and electrical amperage meters that actually, if they get wet and get salt on them, they will stop working. They'll get fused in the closed position, in the closed position, and won't do the tripping they need to do.
I just was going to
move us on to another subject, and I do want to get a lot of calls in here.
Go ahead.
But we've heard a lot about shoddy construction in China, for example, where buildings have fallen apart because of earthquakes and the like. It turns out there's a lot of shoddy construction in New York City as well, isn't there?
Well, that's true. Buildings that were built over 100 years ago that were just bungalows in along the ocean area where people used to travel by horse and buggy in order to get to stay there in the summertime. So, and all of a sudden, these houses, because transportation was now much more readily with the automobile, the invention of the automobile and the distribution of it, these houses that were meant for just summer use for only about 2 months are now being utilized all year round. So it's a whole different ball game that these buildings were built as temporary housing and then became permanent housing.
But I take exception to the phrase that they're shoddy housing. Many of these buildings, as I did take a walk along Bell Harbor Beach and saw the destruction that had occurred. And my parents live in Manhattan Beach. I grew up there, living there for 52 years now, and they never had a drop of water in their basement. All of a sudden, this comes along. So for building something that has never happened, and all of a sudden these buildings are being washed out. And I also have to say that the buildings that I examined, I walked along, and one of them I did examine for a client, that building was a steel frame constructed building and sustained almost no damage. So it's not – we just didn't build that way. Also, we have to say that all the brownstones and townhouses that are in this city are basically being held together by gravity. So if we had any kind of earthquake at all, we would have some major devastation here. But we don't have that kind. But we don't know. Things could change. So there's a changing element to our city here, and we have to deal with that.
My guests are the gurus of How To, Al and Larry Ubell. And we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692, or you can write us on our show page at WNYC.org. This is the Leonard Lopate Show on WNYC and 93.9 FM and AM 820. And before we get to the calls, just we got to take care of one other piece of business, and that is the last time you were here, we tried to get our quiz through, and we were preempted in the middle of the show because the president had an important speech. So we're going to return to last month's quiz. Here,
that's right.
Let me read it this time, just for the sheer fun of it. Name the woodworks clamp that's made with two blocks of wood with two attached handles on each side that turn like the pedals on a bicycle for opening and closing the clamp. We've all seen that kind of clamp.
It has a name.
Okay. So give us a call if you know the name, and if you have the correct answer, we can send you a book that will be particularly helpful at this point.
Save energy, save money.
Okay, because we're thinking a lot about saving energy. Mm-hmm. Let's go to a couple of our calls. Gerard, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Gerard.
Hi. Radiators about since the 1950s, new heating system. Mm-hmm. Can I replace all the radiator valves at the end of each radiator and then tilt them in the right direction, which I think is how the water goes out and comes in?
Right.
And that will that make a big difference? Because I've got areas of my house that are very cold and areas of my house that are hell.
Okay. I'm assuming you're saying there's a steam system.
Yes.
Okay. Very common problem. Actually, examining a home yesterday where the radiators on the first floor were very, very warm and the ones on the top floor were not very warm
exactly.
at all. And the problem is that the way the system works is when the steam comes up, it actually has to evacuate all the air out of the system. Well, it gets to the first floor first and then the second and the third. Well, if the thermostat is in one of the rooms where it gets warm quickly,
right.
the system shuts off. So one thing is to maybe relocate the thermostat.
Okay.
The other thing is to the orifice on the air vents on the side of the radiator are there are different sizes. So what you need to do for the top floor is get very big openings so the steam goes right up to the top floor. And on the warmer rooms, make the orifice smaller. And this is a trial and error type of thing. Also, these air vents only really have anywhere between a 5 and 10 year life expectancy. So they do need, if they're not venting any air, you don't feel any air coming out of them, then they're not working and it needs to be replaced. So
okay,
try that and you might get better balance.
What's the actual valve called?
It's called an air vent.
Thank you very much.
But on those rooms that are really very cold, what you can do is you can put two air vents instead of sometimes one, and that you can put on with a configuration of these quarter-inch pipe systems that you can plug onto the radiator itself in order to evacuate the cold air so that steam can come in easily.
Mm-hmm. Shirley from Brooklyn writes, is it possible to paint a tile bathroom floor? What should she use, and how can she have her bathtub reglazed?
Well, I'm not a big – reglazing is a misnomer. It's actually just painting it. Usually they use epoxy paint, and sometimes that goes well and sometimes it goes very badly. The biggest determining factor –
you could always spot it, can't you?
Yeah, it's very easy. The biggest determining factor is how clean you clean the tub before you apply the paint. As far as painting the floor, I don't think that's going to work well because the scuffing action of shoes and so on will just start grounding off the paint. And
so what's the answer there if your tile floor – you got to
redo the tile floor.
Redo the whole tile floor.
But the trick is probably if the tile floor looks so bad, they might have put in ceramic tile instead of glass tile or porcelain tile, which holds up to walking much better. If it's a ceramic tile, they scratch very easily, and then you get the underside of the underlayment material showing through, or what the tile is actually made of.
Or the floor is not supporting the tile altogether, and it's starting to break up. I mean, it could be a matter of material defect or structural defect.
Now, we got a lot of calls coming in with people who have problems with their heating systems.
Okay.
I'm hoping that we could just rush through them. Maybe we could take three or four in a row and then handle it that way.
That would be a good idea.
Okay. We go to Caddy, and then can my audio engineer put the next two on as well, Bill and Joe?
So we're talking to Caddy?
Caddy, Bill, and Joe?
Yes. Caddy, you want to start?
What's up, Caddy?
Go ahead.
Hello, Caddy. Well, okay.
Yeah. Who's this?
This is Dan.
Okay. I don't even have your name here. Are you calling from Brooklyn?
No.
Portugal?
Long Island.
Okay. You are absolutely... Is this Bayside?
No.
Okay. Well, I don't know what happened there. Are you calling about a heating problem?
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. I live in a house with a semi-slab floor. And I have hot water, gas, hot water baseboard.
Yes.
And my concern is once my pipes froze because I have a wood-burning stove.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to know if there's an additive you can add to the system without, you know, compromising the integrity of the pipes.
Yes.
Okay, wait. Then let's have Bill give us his question.
Okay, hold on to your question.
Bill from Brooklyn?
Bill, what's your question?
Yes, I'm here. Hey, guys, I called last year because I have an Empire Stove wall unit that was put in probably in the 1970s.
Yeah.
And when I put those two wires together at the thermostat, it wouldn't turn on. So
yeah.
You guys suggested that I replace the thermopile.
Well, yeah.
So I did. I got a new thermopile, put it in. And then when I put the two wires together, it did turn on, but it took a long time. Like, I had to leave those two wires together. You know how you kind of jump it? I had to leave those wires together for almost like a day to a day and a half.
Yeah.
When it got warm, I took the wires apart, and then to retest it again, I put the wires together again, and it still hasn't really jumped or turned the heat on. So I'm beginning to think that, as you said last year, it could be the valve, and it's one of those Robert Shaw valves. And if it is the valve, you know, number one, where can I find it? And B, is it even worth replacing?
Are these questions
they're totally
least,
unrelated.
Okay, so then the third one. Okay.
Let me talk to Dan first.
Hello.
Dan, the easy thing to do is if you're worried about the water freezing, they do make a antifreeze mixture for circulated hot water systems. Because
you know what it's called?
It's antifreeze. Just go to any plumbing supply place. Because they designed this because some heating equipment is now being placed on roofs of buildings.
Right.
So if the heat goes down and that's on the roof, that's going to get cold first,
right,
and it would freeze. So they make this material. It's an antifreeze glycol mix, and you put some of it into your system. I'm not sure how we would get it into your system.
That's my concern also. How do you get it in?
I think this is going to be – I think a plumber is probably going to have to be involved in this in some way, but you could definitely do it.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for calling. And now what about Bill? And then we have Joe waiting on the line.
Okay. With Bill, I would actually, at this point, since you've been having so much trouble with it, I would, if you could, I would probably go with a more conventional, gas valve with a thermocoupling, and just have this, conventional gas valve installed on the system, because either the gas valve is so old that it's taking so long to respond that you might have it just gummed up and it's just not working well anymore.
Because sometimes a power pile stops giving off electricity. The power pile is really a thermal coupling type of thing that produces its own electricity when it's over the pilot light. Mm. And if that does not produce electricity, it lost its ability as a power pile to produce electricity, it's not going to work well.
Yeah, okay, so
I
and
would
now we have
for an upgrade.
We have a third one, Joe from Bayside.
What's up, Joe?
Hi. I have a question about heating systems and electricity.
Yeah.
I know a gas furnace would need some kind of power, electrical power, for the thermostat and also to ignite the furnace. But considering what happened, why aren't furnaces equipped with some kind of backup system, like a battery pack that you can manually operate in case of...
Why they don't? Because this is not a common condition that we have here, and generally most power outages around the country last usually for less than an hour or two. So to do that kind of – here where we had a catastrophic event and systems were out all over the place. I mean, I even saw the great picture of the East Side power station exploding. That's an unusual situation. But, yes, you could get a backup, but the problem is it has to produce at least 24 volts AC. You know, because these systems are AC low voltage, and if you would have to have a battery system that would convert from DC to AC, and then you would be able to power it. And if you got one of those systems together, yes, you could run your heating equipment. But if you have a circulated hot water system, you need 120 volts to actually make the pump circulate. So it would be very difficult. Steam systems could operate very easily. Yeah. Hot water systems would be much more difficult.
Yeah, but as far as batteries are concerned, even if it's an ever-ready, sometimes it's not ever-ready.
You would have to have this battery on a trickle charge all the time.
And they wear out after a while.
Right.
And you got to replace them, and people are not going to replace them on a regular basis.
Yeah. Battery backups are a high-maintenance issue.
We have to take a little break, and we'll be back with more of your calls and questions to the gurus of how to, Al and Larry Ubell, the number 212-433-9692, or you can write us on our show page at WNYC.org. Don't forget to share your favorite holiday cookie recipes in our annual swap. Whether it's the perfect gingerbread or the world's best sugar cookie, we would love to see the recipe. Post yours by Friday afternoon, and then New York Times food columnist Melissa Clark will be here on the 18th to talk about the ones she's chosen as her favorites. For more information, go to our show page at WNYC.org. And this is WNYC and WNYC.org. You can also catch up with the show on Facebook and Twitter.
WNYC is supported by Kripalu Center for Yoga and Health, a nonprofit educational retreat center dedicated to empowering people and communities through the wisdom and practice of yoga. Kripalu.org. The New York Philharmonic performing Schumann's Piano Concerto with Jan Liszewski and Sibelius's 3rd and 7th Symphonies. David Sinman conducts this Thursday and Saturday evening, plus a Friday matinee performance. Tickets at nyphil.org. Grace on Broadway, starring Paul Rudd, Michael Shannon, Ed Asner, and Kate Arrington. Fate, coincidence, and romance collide in this dark comedy by one of the writers of 6 Feet Under. On Broadway through January 6th. Tickets at telecharge.com.
At WNYC, we'll always stand by you, giving you the facts when you need them most. Breaking news that's sometimes tough to hear. Connecting you to people across the city and around the world, bringing your voice into the mix. Because sometimes it's good to listen, and sometimes it's great to be heard. WNYC. Never turn it off.
Joseph P. Kennedy was a multimillionaire at the age of 40, a movie mogul, an ambassador, most important, the head of one of America's greatest political dynasties. On the next Fresh Air, Terry Gross speaks with David Nassau, author of a new biography called The Patriarch. Then that's at 2 on 93.9 FM WNYC. I hope you're not too brokenhearted if you have called in with the wrong answer to the quiz, which is name the woodworks clamp that's made, excuse me, with two blocks of wood with two attached handles on each side that turn like the pedals on a bicycle for opening and closing the clamp. And we have a number of people who have called in with what they think is the right answer, beginning with Kevin from Wilson, Connecticut. What do you think it is, Kevin?
Hi.
Hi, how are you? I think it's a Jorgensen clamp.
The Jorgensen is the name of the manufacturer.
So that's not the answer.
It's not the generic.
But yeah, because other people can also manufacture this kind
of
clamp.
Yes, I used to use thousands of these things because I was a cabinet maker, and it's the most popular kind of clamp in cabinet making.
And Jim from Millington, New Jersey. Millington, New Jersey. What do you think it is?
What's up?
It's. Am I on?
Yeah.
It's a hand screw, or sometimes called a wood screw.
Well, yeah, that's it. Okay, how'd you know?
I am a woodworker.
Oh, you're a woodworker. Yeah, that's a very popular clamp. It doesn't mar the surfaces that you are using, and it's very tight and easy to open and easy to close and adjust to specific angles. And
it's one of the most versatile
clamps that one can find without destroying what you're clamping.
Yep, you're lost without them.
Okay, so what does Jim get?
He gets Save Energy, Save Money by Alvin Ubell and George Merlis, was my producer on Good Morning America. And it's a great book, save you literally thousands of dollars in electrical service.
So, Jim, what I'm going to do is I'm going to put you on hold,
okay. And
my producer will take your address, and then we'll send you the book, okay?
Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling.
Good luck.
And we go now to Chris from the Upper West Side. Hi, you're on the
air. Hi, Chris. What's up?
I picked up part of a program you did some time ago about buckling floors. We live in a brownstone. We're on the first floor right above the boiler.
Right.
And in the summer, when the boiler's off, we'll sometimes in a humid day wind up with a little mountain where there's one of the about three or four of these boards will bulge up. And again, it happens intermittently when the boiler's on. And I heard you saying something about a dehumidifier, but I'm trying to figure out how that would work. How would I use that?
Okay, I'll tell you what's going on. Is you're getting a heat condition going on above the boiler. That is creating a high-pressure situation where any of the moisture that's in the basement or the cellar is starting to evaporate and wants to get out of the basement. So it comes up through these planks in the floor and causes them to expand. By dehumidifying the basement, you're bringing the relative humidity down, so all that would be coming up is heat. But I also have to say one other thing. If it's getting that hot above the boiler that it's causing the wood to expand that much, then I think there's a major heat loss going on. And also, I would also check to see if there's a blockage in the chimney.
So you say there's a heat loss.
There's a heat loss.
Is there something he can do to cut down on the heat loss?
Well, let me finish.
You insulate?
The one thing I want to say is that if there's a blockage in the chimney and the moisture from the heating equipment is coming into the basement, that's going to create a high moisture condition. So the first thing I would do is actually have the chimney checked out or tell the landlord to have the chimney checked out, because if that's blocked, that's dangerous, and it also could be causing the problem.
I'm sorry. Yeah, we did have the boiler was cleaned very recently, and they did check the flue.
Then it could just be a high humidity level.
Right.
in the basement and a dehumidifier would just bring that down and therefore create, you know, reduce the amount of moisture which is being absorbed by the wood planks in your apartment.
Yeah, but also they could put on a piece of sheet metal above, on the ceiling of the boiler, really sheet, and then in between that and the joist, fill it up with insulation, fiberglass insulation, so that you have an insulation value in that area above the boiler so that the heat doesn't distort the wood framing.
Now, if this keeps on happening, will that have a long-term effect on his floors?
Not really, unless it really gets saturated with moisture, then all of a sudden you get a fungus infection or a bacterial infection, which actually eats away at the nutrients that are part of the wood fiber.
But I don't think the wood is getting that wet. I think it's more of an expansion issue than it is a mold.
Yeah,
a potential mold issue.
If you dry out one piece of wood on one side, that shrinks and the upper side is expansion, so it warps upward. If the reverse happens, it warps downward. It depends upon where the low relative humidity is and where the heat is coming from.
Let's take another call. Jen from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Jen.
Jen, are you there?
Are you? No.
Okay. Yeah,
oh,
go ahead, Jen.
I thought it was my name's Jan.
Jan.
Oh, Jan.
Well,
oh, I'm
somebody
honored.
Misspelled it. I'm
anyway,
sorry.
Anyway, continue.
And so I have these beige spots on my wall. Mm-hmm. I noticed them a long time ago, and they seem to be at a place where I had a lot of moths. Mm-hmm. And so I recently also had floors redone, totally redone, and the moth situation has markedly declined. And then getting ready for the floor refinishing, mm-hmm. I moved out a lot of stuff, and I saw some screens in back of a door, and there's a whole bunch of that little beige stuff there. I don't think that's an accumulating place for
Could I ask you a question on that?
Yeah.
Are those little spots on the wall, say in a blank wall, are they like one underneath another? Are they in unison to some way? Or they're just haphazard all over the place?
It's totally haphazard, and they're very hard to get off. I mean,
well, all right. So what's happening is those could be mold spots that are there from whatever the reason, where moisture condensed on that particular wall. And what happened is the spore that may be on the wall and the moisture and the temperature in that room could cultivate that particular spore and make those little spots. What that wall has to be doing is washed with a solution of chlorine bleach and a little liquid detergent, and the paint that you paint over it should have a fungicide, extra fungicide added to the paint so as to control that condition.
Now, could she also just paint over those spots after she cleans them with a metal paint and seal them that way?
You could use, well, those spots could be sprayed with a metallic paint, like you said. That's a very, you learned a lot over the years, I'm telling you.
I actually listened to what you guys said.
Yes, if you take a metallic paint over those little spots in a spray can and then let it dry, maybe two coats over that spot, and then paint it with your regular color, you may be able to hold back that spore growth from coming through the coating that you put on the wall.
But let me ask you a question. What leads you to believe that this is related to a moth infestation?
Because the first place that I noticed them was in back of a doorway, had a lot of clothing, uh-huh. and there was one thing in particular that I had to throw out this year. This could be,
you know, I'm thinking that could be related to maybe, are these spots completely round or are they odd shaped? Are they?
They're mostly round. They've started appearing in a couple of different places now. I mean, my apartment is definitely not. I mean, I try to add water to the place because it's so dry in here.
Yeah, probably is very dry. It could also be, I'm just guessing.
Okay, now I'm looking at one and it's definitely now,
is this
kind of
in Amityville? Is this the site of the Amityville horror?
let me tell you about the moth condition. The moth condition is not unusual because if a moth did crawl over some surface, something like that, they could leave behind it some excretions
that acts as
a nutrient for a sporal growth at that particular spot.
But the solution to the problem is the same.
It's the same. It's washing and then coating with that metallic paint.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Jan, thank you for calling.
That you so brilliantly brought forth.
Well, I try. Beth from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Beth.
Hello?
Yes, Beth.
We're here.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, great. I have a hole in my wall.
Yes.
And the plaster is coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really ugly. How do I fix it?
Well, what you can do is if you take some if you stuff that little hole with some fiberglass or maybe some newspaper and back it up, and then take some spackling compound and putting a coating right over that, let it dry for 2 days, then put another coating over, and you do two or three coats until it's nice and smooth with the surface. The wider the trowel that you use, the smoother the surface, and then you could also sandpaper it down then paint it.
How big is the hole? How many inches approximately across is this hole?
Well, it's long rather than deep.
When
I
you
guess.
Mean?
Say it's 5 or 6 inches across. And what should I stuff it with? What is it?
Newspaper would work better. Just take old newspaper and stuff it in there, and then just spackle it over with joint compound.
Yes.
Thank you for calling us. We have a lot of people who've been writing in.
Mm-hmm.
Elliot in Brooklyn writes, I live in a brownstone in Brooklyn that has pocket doors to the hallway of the ground floor and the parlor level.
Mm-hmm.
During the winter, you can feel the breeze coming through the pocket closest to the front facade. How can we insulate there without ripping out the wall?
That's difficult. A pocket door is generally not an airtight type of door because it hangs loosely on the track above, or it's being embedded on a track on the floor, which has these wheels or shivs that let it go back and forth into the door. Those kind of doors are very difficult to control airflow.
But I have an idea. What you do is, if it's a double pocket door, you take the stop out and you move the pocket door that's toward the front of the building and you move it out of the way so you can look inside the pocket. Then you get a piece of rigid board insulation, cut it to the shape of the opening, and try to move it toward the back of the opening to create a blockage at that point, or a baffle in that part of the door. And then that will help.
It
will help.
It could help, but it's going to be difficult. I've installed hundreds of those kinds of doors, and they're never airtight.
Yeah.
Joe in Brooklyn asked.
But here's the problem he was saying is the air is actually coming down the wall from inside the pocket, not through the door, but from the end of the partition. Okay.
Yes.
Joe in Brooklyn asks, what do you think about interior storm windows? We have a double panel window with hollow metal frames. They weren't drafty, but the metal conducts so much heat. My wife got an estimate to replace all the windows, but it was pretty steep. I read about interior storm windows, and they look like they could be cost-effective. Am I being optimistic?
Well, I did a job on Fifth Avenue, right across the street from the Metropolitan Museum of Art, for a very, very big apartment. And I installed an extra set of double-hung, double-glazed windows on the inside of the window. We could not replace the outside window because that was landmarked. But on the inside, I could put these windows on the inside. And not only did the apartment get more comfortable, but the sound transmission from the outside traffic was completely eliminated.
But I have to say that in that installation, the installation of the windows was more for soundproofing than it was for energy saving, because that was a co-op, so she wasn't that concerned about saving money. But the one thing I want to say is, if they do that, it is a very effective way, but you have to make sure that you have a way for the water to drain out that condensates between the inner window and the outer window. So we don't want to rot out those windowsills.
I want to deal with Richard because he has a crisis, but we have very little time. Richard,
yeah.
Can you tell us it as quickly as possible?
What's up?
Yeah. Hi. Love the show.
Yeah.
I had just almost 2 feet of water in one of those bungalows just a block up from the shore.
Yeah.
And, you know, I power washed them like the very next day.
Yeah.
Came in with power wash and we cleaned it up and vacuumed it all up straight away. They look okay.
Yeah,
I
but
just plan
what's
on
the concern?
Refinishing them.
What's the concern?
About mildew and
okay.
health concerns.
And salt in the wood.
You have to wash everything.
Well, which wood are we talking about?
Just regular hardwood floors.
Oh, okay. So if the hardwood floors, as far as mildew and things like that, dehumidify, that'll get all the moisture out. As far as the salt is concerned, do the best you can for washing it out and soaking it with cold water cold or warm water to dissolve that extra salt. But as far as mold is concerned, if we can get the humidity level down to 50%, mold will not grow.
Okay, well, we have a lot of calls and questions that we couldn't get to,
mm-hmm.
but people can write to you.
write at larry@ubell.com, or you can actually write alvin@ubell.com. We'll both answer them.
And,
whichever one of us you like better, that's the one you should write.
And put a phone number.
Phone number, definitely.
Along with the question, and also be patient, you've said, because you guys actually have to work for a little.
We have day jobs.
And, if the question is really interesting, I will call you back.
And the Ubells will be back with us on February 13th. When?
Yes. When we should show all of America how to go forth and fix, save energy, money, and
do it safely.
We have a star-studded show lined up for you tomorrow, starting with Samuel L. Jackson talking about his role in Quentin Tarantino's latest film, Django Unchained, and then Harry Belafonte and actor Peter Coyote talk about an upcoming concert to benefit the Native American activist Leonard Peltier, who's been in prison since the mid-70s. Also, Rick Ocasek discusses his work with and beyond his iconic band, The Cars, and Mark Bittman will talk about food policy, seasonal dishes, and, of course, how to cook everything. The Leonard Lopez Show is produced by Blake Neshek, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Higgins, the executive producer. We had help today from Judy Joe, Matthew McDonough, and contributing producer Barbara Kahn. Jason Isaac was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopez, your host. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.